Juno Afternoon is up next. Beth Weigel will be here with an update on library activities. Florian Tanzina, an exchange student from Germany, will be here to highlight a Rotary fundraiser. We'll talk with Warren Moon, Wednesday's Pillars of American Freedom speaker, and JDHS Drama presents Junie B. Jones, the musical, with guest Michelle Moore. That's Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and More, live at 3 on KTOO News and online via KTOO.org.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Health Minister of Ontario, Canada, recently traveled to a troubled reserve in the northern part of the province, which has been facing a suicide crisis. He says the visit was just as devastating as the years he spent as a doctor in global war zones. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Eric Hoskins visited Attawapiskat in the days after the First Nation declared a suicide emergency. Dozens of young people on the reserve tried to kill themselves in recent months. Hoskins said it's deeply upsetting when you have children that young that are in such pain or have lost hope.
We've failed, and what we've provided thus far has been inadequate. So we have, as a society across this nation, we've got a tremendous responsibility to First Nations.
In addition to meeting with community leaders in Attawapiskat, Hoskins sat down for a few hours with dozens of young people, all of whom had been affected by suicide. Talks focused on the suicide crisis and ways to move forward. Ontario plans to bring social workers to the reserve to help deal with the crisis and offer round-the-clock mental health care and $2 million in aid. Dr. Michael Curlew is with the Sioux Lookout First National Health Authority. Curlew said children on the reserve need help immediately.
I have no way of getting children that I see out for access to developmental services, essential services such as speech language pathology, occupational therapy. I am very limited in what I can do.
Curlew says those who are non-insured do not have their travel out of the remote reserve paid for. He says the first step is to remove any barriers for children to access care and get the child to care first, then worry about the registration and the paperwork. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Tribal health representatives have doubts about promises made by the Indian Health Service. This after the IHS agreed to make changes to improve quality of care at hospitals on the Pine Ridge and Rosebud reservations. The IHS came to terms over the weekend with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in order to prevent losing funding. Hospitals in the Great Plains area have been under fire for years for substandard care. A Rosebud tribal health representative told the Argus Leader the IHS has violated agreements before. U.S. lawmakers have vowed to keep pressure on federal officials. Meanwhile, a lawsuit has been filed on behalf of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe over its emergency room. A play on domestic and sexual violence impacting Native women recently took to New York City's Off-Broadway. Christine Trudeau has more.
The NYU Law Women Advocacy Co-Chairs invited Cherokee playwright Mary Catherine Nagel to put on stage a production of her play, Sliver of a Full Moon. It's written and performed by Nagel on the evolving movement for Native American women to receive justice and protection against domestic and sexual violence. Nagel's play follows the interwoven narrative of several women, some of whom playing themselves, sharing their stories of survival and work in passing the 2013 Violence Against Women, known as VAWA, provisions. These provisions allowed for tribal nations to prosecute non-natives who committed crimes of domestic violence on tribal lands against Native women. Nagel cites their next hurdle as being able to include provisions to protect Native youth as well.
There's nothing unconstitutional about our tribes exercising their inherent sovereignty. Inherent in that is the belief that the U.S. Constitution is somehow superior to our tribal constitutions, and it's not.
In 2018 is when the next VAWA reauthorization is up, which could change a lot for tribal sovereignty, according to advocates. Gloria Steinem was among those in the audience. The feminist icon and founder of Miss Magazine says she felt the play was a very important teaching tool that could be used to bring change.
It is a really groundbreaking example of taking something very complicated and very dramatization-averse and making it dramatic and making it accessible.
The play has traveled from Ivy Leagues and communities in Indian country in the past few years, and sites are set for a performance in Washington, D.C. I'm Christine Trudeau.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Support by the year-long celebration of Native American artist Lloyd Kiva New at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture, the IAIA Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, and the New Mexico Museum of Art. Info at nmculture.org/LKN.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandlin with Jeff Brown on the board. We have a number of interesting topics today. First, a quick look at weather. Mostly cloudy with scattered rain. That will be through tomorrow night. On Thursday, that drops to just a chance of rain, but then rain heavy at times on Friday. Glad to be here and glad to have with me today Beth Weigel from Juneau Public Libraries, as well as Mary Abo and Margie Shackelford with the Empty Chair Project. We have some interesting topics to talk about today. Beth, how about a rundown for the programs and offerings that are at our local public libraries? There's always such a roster.
That's right, and it's May, so we're getting very close to summer reading program at the end of the month, but we do take a little break from a few things as well in May. So for the month of May, we take a break from doing toddler times and story times and our Cuenta Cuentas Infantil, which is the Spanish story time. So those are on hold for the month, but we have a variety of other ways your kids can get involved in some of the things we'll be doing this month. We do continue with our Lego Club on the first Wednesday of the month out at the Valley. We'll still have our family nights on the first Thursday this week and the third Thursday. And I know we're going to have the Mendenhall Rock Band back on the third Thursday out at the Valley, so that should be pretty fun. And we'll still have our English classes every Wednesday in May at the Valley Library as well. So those are some things that are still continuing and a few things that are on hold for the month. And then, like I mentioned, we're going to have some really great kind of outreach events that we'll be doing this month. And first off is the Maritime Festival this Saturday. We'll be having a booth there, and we'll be running a little scavenger hunt. We'll be sharing the space with the Juneau Douglas City Museum, and our scavenger hunt will take you to a variety of places, including the library and the museum and Hearthside books, and winners can solve some puzzles, or the people who enter or are going on the scavenger hunt can solve some puzzles at each location and then be entered into a drawing for a $25 gift certificate and a signed copy of the book Scavenger Hunt, all provided by Macmillan Children's Publishing. So it's going to be a really fun event, as well as we'll have maritime-themed books and story time and our little Chill Kitty boat and Legos and things like that. So be sure to come and visit us at the Maritime Festival. We'll also be out at Community Day next, the following Saturday at the university. Hopefully it'll be a sunny day. I know this weekend.
It often has been.
Yeah, it's always funny. The Maritime Festival seems to be a little windy, rainy, and then the Community Day is often sunny. So we'll take whatever weather, we'll be there, and it'll be great fun. And then we're also going to be doing one more final Science on Screen. We have Andy coming in next week to talk a little bit more about that, but just we'll have some free screenings of Some Like It Hot, a very well-known old movie where, you know, some people dress up and drag and run around and do crazy things, and that kind of pairs up with our talk with Aidan Key. He's a well-known, nationally recognized speaker, and he's going to be talking about transgender children in today's society on the 12th of May at the Valley Library at 6. So lots of interesting things happening at the library. And in addition to this Saturday being the Maritime Festival, we're also really excited to have an author visit as well, who's Jamie Ford. And we're going to be hosting the Empty Chair exhibit in the library this week, and people can come and visit that, as well as then come and hear Jamie Ford talk a little bit about his book, The Hotel on the Corner of Bitter and Sweet, which is a very lovely story, which these ladies can probably tell you a little bit more about, as well as the Empty Chair Project.
When you say the Empty Chair Project, will have a display at the library.
Yes.
You mean downtown or the valley?
The downtown library,
okay.
Yes. So you can come visit us at the Maritime Festival and then go up to the library and check that out. And it'll be a great time to be downtown this Saturday.
Well, I'm excited that such a well-known author is coming in. It's a pleasure to have Margie Shackelford and Mary Abo with us here today. They are almost lifetime friends from Juneau. And Mary, why don't you talk about what the Empty Chair Project means. You have a very personal relationship to the name of that project, and then we can have Margie explain it a little bit more. But what does it symbolize, that name, Mary?
The Empty Chair is like the chair that was left for my brother John, who was supposed to be the valedictorian of that 1942 spring class, but the executive order, 9066, came where all the Japanese in Juneau had to be evacuated and incarcerated because of the Pearl Harbor attack. And the chair represents all the people that had to be, that were absent. And it was a project brought together by people from Juneau. And it tells a story about 8 families who were living in Juneau at the time. And we are very grateful for Juneau community for remembering us.
Including your brother John Tanaka, as you said. And Mary, how old were you? Were you born, and do you have recollections of the internment process?
I was born in 1940, so I was 2 years old. So the whole process, I don't remember, but I do remember being in camp with my mother, and she was left alone without my father, who was in a different camp because he was born in Japan, and so they were separated from their wives and children, which was very difficult because she could hardly speak English. But lucky for her, she had my two brothers who were in high school and my sister and me, so we were together.
And how long was your family in the camp? The main part of your family, I know your father was in a different location. And what were the locations of where you were forced to be incarcerated, and for how long?
My father was sent to Lordsburg, New Mexico, and he was separated from us for about a year and a half. And people from Juneau, like businessmen, sent letters, affidavits, attesting to his loyalty. And so I think gradually, he was able to be, I think they called, paroled to Minidoka, where we were. So he joined our family there. And we were there at Minidoka near Hunt, Idaho.
How long, eventually, was the family still there?
Altogether, I think we were there 3 years.
So you had an early childhood experience that was involved in this enclosed setting.
Right.
Margie, you have been buddies with Mary since you were young, young women, young girls in Juneau. Talk a little bit about the Empty Chair Project, which you have chaired.
Well, first of all, I think it's important to realize that Mary never, although I knew Mary from about the third grade, she nor her family ever talked about that experience for maybe 2 decades. And I didn't find out about it till we were both out of college accidentally, because she wrote a story for a publication at UW that I read that kind of, and it was about the experience for her family, and it was kind of a shock to me. And then over the years, we talked about it more and more, and my sister Carlene Grumman and I noticed that there were memorials in other parts of the United States for the Japanese who've been incarcerated, and we thought it would be a good idea to memorialize our friend's experience here in Juneau. And so that's how, and we knew that Mary nor Alice would ever suggest that idea. So we suggested it to them, and they luckily acquiesced, and we got together and formed a committee with some of our classmates. And then we applied for a grant from the National Park Service, and wonder of wonders, since neither Mary nor I had ever written a grant, we got it. So our purpose was to establish a memorial, but also to educate young people about the internment, because we found that a lot of young people today do not really know very much about it. And there's a lot of key values and issues involved with the internment that are pretty apparent on today's political scene. So part of that effort is bringing Jamie Ford and another author called Kirby Larson to town, because the teachers in the Juneau schools have begun using those books. We also have kits we assembled. They're like a culture kit. Teaches about the people from this locale and their families and what happened to them. So we're trying to wed literature and personal experience together.
Seems like the best history would be the history that's closest to us in our community. So thank you for your work on that. Let's talk a little bit about Jamie Ford, who wrote The Hotel at the Corner of Bitter and Sweet, and or Kirby Larson. Who would like to talk about Jamie's visit and what it will involve? Mary, everybody's looking at you, including me now.
Jamie Ford, a bestseller, will be speaking to Thunder Mountain, one creative writing class and two sophomore lit classes. And the lit classes all have copies of the book, so they'll be well prepared when he comes to visit them on Friday. And Saturday he'll be doing a book talk at the library from 4 to 6. And the story is about a Chinese boy who falls in love with a Japanese girl, and is kind of thought of as a Romeo and Juliet story, thwarted by the racial prejudice at the time. And it's kind of unrequited love, too, because they're separated because of the camps. He doesn't know that she never answered his letters. She didn't receive the letters. And it's really interesting because I think they meet again when they're in their 70s. And their love still prevails.
And the other interesting thing about the book is that if you go to Seattle, where it's set in Seattle, you can visit the International District and you can visit the Panama Hotel, which still has in its, there's a plexiglass floor. It's now, I think it's a working hotel still, right? And it has a coffee shop. And if you look through the plexiglass, you can see the artifacts, all the suitcases that were left behind by families who could not take everything they had with them. And then you can go on a tour of it and see some of the places that were featured in Hotel at the Corner of Bitter and Sweet.
So I know not that long ago there was a significant ceremony to launch and to honor the Empty Chair project. Will there be other public events or ceremonies that will be occurring this spring or on an annual basis?
Well, Margie lives in Fresno and I live in Bremerton, so we're kind of hoping that the people of Juneau would be interested, like in the schools. There are significant dates, like in February is the Day of Remembrance, the day of the Executive Order 9066. But whatever the schools or the city wants to do to continue what the Empty Chair has started, we would be most appreciative.
They did have a gathering at the library in the Valley for this particular Day of Remembrance. I think Margie Hamburger from the museum.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we showed the film.
Yes.
As well.
They showed Greg Cheney's film,
yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Beth, let's reiterate that on Saturday, 4 to 6, Jamie Ford, author of The Hotel at the Corner of Bitter and Sweet, will be making a public presentation. Mary said at the library. Is that downtown or Valley?
Yep, that's the downtown library.
The downtown library, and that's open to the public. I assume it's free?
It's free and open to the public. We'll also have the retractable displays of the Empty Project up this whole week at the library, and it talks about the Empty Chair Project as well as seven other families, so you can learn a little bit more about that all week and a little bit into next week, and we'll also be at the Maritime Festival.
Okay.
And don't forget also the Juneau Public Library is part of Juneau Votes, and Juneau Votes is also holding another How to Run for Local workshop, a local office workshop, and that's in June, but you need to register for that. And so there's still some spots available, but it is filling up pretty fast. So if you're interested in taking that workshop on how to run for local office, you can go to www.junolwv.org, or you can call us over at the library and we can give you that information again.
And you know, LWV is for League of Women Voters.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Let's have your website, Beth,
and
for
our
library.
Our website is www.juno.org/library. We also have our Facebook page. And you can always give us a call. And just keep in mind, we'll be closed on Memorial Day at the end of the month. And we'll have our summer reading program begin here at the end of the month as well. So get ready for lots of fun reading this summer and some great events. And we'll look forward to that.
All about books, but so much more than books. Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Margie Shackelford. Thank you, Mary Abo, for sharing with us this important information about Jamie Ford's visit, the Empty Chair Project, and what's happening at our public libraries.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 3rd of May, 2016. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "A prince never lacks legitimate reasons to break his promise." Niccolo Machiavelli, born in Florence, 1469. At a time when Italy was not a unified country, it was a collection of city-states, a time of instability, Machiavelli lost his job when the city government of Florence was overthrown by the Medici family, and he wrote his book, The Prince, in 1513 as an instruction manual on obtaining and holding on to power, in hopes that he could impress the Medicis and get a job with them. He wrote that morality was irrelevant when it came to running a state, that rulers should be willing to do evil when necessary to hold on to power and maintain security. It's the birthday of the photographer and social reformer Jacob Riis, born in Ribe, Denmark, 1849, whose flash photographs of living conditions in the slums of New York helped bring about housing reforms. It's the birthday of the Israeli poet and novelist Yehuda Amichai, born Ludwig Pfeffer in Würzburg, Germany, 1924, moved to Palestine, became an Israeli citizen, and was one of the first poets to write in colloquial Hebrew. And it's the birthday of the poet and novelist May Sarton, born in Vondelgem, Belgium, 1912, came to this country as a child, thought she would go into the theater, and then a series of her sonnets was published in Poetry Magazine in 1930, and she decided to become a writer. Also a memoirist, her memoir Journal of a Solitude came out in 1973. She had a stroke in 1990. She couldn't write anymore, but she produced three more journals and a volume of verse by dictating them into a tape recorder. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver entitled Leaves and Blossoms Along the Way. If you're John Muir, you want trees to live among. If you're Emily, a garden will do. Try to find the right place for yourself. If you can't find it, at least dream of it. When one is alone and lonely, the body gladly lingers in the wind or the rain, or splashes into the cold river, or pushes through the ice-crusted snow, anything that touches. God or the gods are invisible, quite understandable, but holiness is visible entirely. Some words will never leave God's mouth, no matter how hard you listen. In all the works of Beethoven, you will not find a single lie. All important ideas must include the trees, the mountains, and the rivers. To understand many things, you must reach out of your own condition. For how many years did I wander slowly through the forest? What wonder and glory I would have missed had I ever been in a hurry. Beauty can both shout and whisper, and still it explains nothing. The point is, you are you, and that's for keeps. Poem by Mary Oliver, Leaves and Blossoms Along the Way, from her collection Felicity, published by Penguin Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. And by LegalZoom, providing legal help to Americans with online services, customer support, and independent legal advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Perseverance Theater presents Annapurna, a morbidly funny story about love and loss. Cowboy poet Ulysses is finishing his final epic poem in a low-rent Colorado trailer park when his ex-wife returns unannounced after 20 years with shocking news. Their bizarre reunion contains both rage and compassion, framing a story that rides the fine line between tragedy and comedy and laughter and loss. Annapurna opens on May 6th and runs through May 29th. For tickets, visit the Jack Hearthside Books, ptalaska.org, or call 463-TIXS.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling, and Jeff Brown is on the board. We have four guests with us in the studio right now, and they are inbound exchange students hosted by the three local Rotary clubs here in Juno. And with me are Kopano Maje. Now, correct my pronunciation if I'm incorrect. Did I say that right, Kopano?
Yes, you did.
Well, okay. Thank you. Florian Tanzina.
Yes, right.
Rifki Zulafami?
Yeah.
Am I close?
It's close.
Okay.
It's bitter.
Close enough for an Anglo, right?
Yeah.
And Marceline Nisset. And we are talking about a fantastic breakfast that is being planned for this Saturday from 8 to 11 at St. Anne's Parish Hall, which is up on 5th Street. But there's a purpose for this breakfast. Marceline, why don't you talk about why are exchange students getting together to make breakfast food for local people? What's the point?
So, first of all, thank you so much for having us on the show today. We are organizing that breakfast to raise money for a Rotary-sponsored project called Shelterbox. And basically, Shelterbox is an NGO that provides emergency supplies to people who just suffered from a natural disaster or a humanitarian crisis. And they send those boxes full of equipment for instance, the earthquake that just happened in Ecuador, lots of people lost their houses and all the things they had. Shelterbox sent those boxes with the vital equipment for them to start again a new life with a tent and supplies for that. And as exchange students, we are here with the Rotary. And the Rotary sponsors lots of projects, organizes lots of projects, both locally and internationally. And one of those projects, international project, is Shelterbox. And we decided as exchange students that we were here to enjoy Alaska, but also to give back to the community and to the world because we became citizens of the world. And so we decided to raise money for Shelterbox because it's a project that we really think can change the lives of many people that are in need.
Florian, why don't you talk about what the goal of the breakfast is in terms of dollars to be raised and how many shelter boxes those dollars should be able to purchase. And we should clarify, as Marceline said, the shelter box contains a number of important pieces of equipment for survival, such as a tent, a water purification tablets, a solar lantern, that sort of thing. What's the goal of the breakfast? What's your dollar sign goal?
Our overall goal is $4,000. So each shelter box costs $1,000 to provide it and send it. The goal of all four of us is to raise $4,000 for four shelter boxes.
Okay. And do you know how many breakfasts you're going to have to serve to raise $4,000? I know tickets are $15 a person. Have you done your business plan yet to know how many breakfasts you'll have to sell?
Well, we have done our business plan, and it will take quite a lot of people. I mean, it's a goal that we have, per se, to reach 4,000, and we don't really necessarily will give a certain amount, because then again, we are reaching out to people, but we're hoping to get at least about 100 people, And those who can't make it, hopefully, will donate to our donation page.
So if there are folks who are listening who cannot come on Saturday, it sounds like there is an option for them to donate to help buy these four shelter boxes. Can you give us the website where they can make the donation?
It's on the shelterboxusa.org website. The Juno Inbounds have a web page on that site. And the link to that site is on our event on Facebook. If people want to go on Facebook, see our event, we have all the links over there.
What would be the Facebook page, Marceline?
It's a fundraising breakfast for Shelterbox.
Oddly enough. All right, one long word, they should be able to find that. Fundraising breakfast for Shelterbox is the Facebook link then to look up when folks are on Facebook. Rifkit, let's talk about what's on the menu.
So at this breakfast, we're not just serving about American food. We're also serving our home country foods. Like me, I'm serving a fried banana from Indonesia, and Marceline serving a Belgian waffle, and Florian Germany bread, and Copano serving boba tea.
Okay, well, we can't just say boba tea without explaining. What is that?
So, Copano, you can explain what this boba tea is.
Well, it's essentially, boba tea is sort of like a meatloaf, but it's more of a two-layered meatloaf. And what I've done, per se, is made it into a breakfast version, because apparently South Africans don't really have a unique breakfast, per se. So I've manipulated that into a breakfast meatloaf with eggs and sausage, and obviously you need bread too.
So the breakfast is between 8 and 11, and it's at the Parish Hall, St. Anne's Parish Hall, up there on 5th Street. And will you all be doing the cooking live? Meaning you're making everything that morning?
So organizing a breakfast for that many people is a lot of organization. And we are trying to figure out what we're cooking at the time and what we can do in advance. For instance, the Belgian waffles or the German bread can be made in advance. Otherwise, we won't have only the indigenous food. We will also have more traditional American breakfast for the people who wish to stay in more an American breakfast with eggs and bacon that will be cooked at the time.
Okay. So it's a rare treat, truly, to have four inbound exchange students here from various parts of the world. Before we conclude, think for a moment, what has been the greatest lesson for you so far this year as an exchange student? Because you don't get to go home during that time. You are here for a year in a very tiny town, kind of on the tip of the southeast archipelago of Alaska, very different from where each of you is from. And I've been to many of your countries as well, so I know that the difference is great. Can you tell me one big takeaway that you have so far from this experience?
I think I can say on behalf of the Juno Exchange Student that we are definitely more independent and more mature. And by organizing that breakfast, we really try to do everything on our own. And that's a real life lesson to organize such a big event, only four of us. And that's definitely, I don't think that if I was in Belgium, I would be able to do that last year before going on exchange with that much work and that much maturity to have to handle such a big project.
Okay, what's been your takeaway in this experience as an exchange student so far from Southeast Asia?
So, I don't even know what is Shelterbox before I come here. And I'm kind of like people like don't care for anything, but because I come from here, I just like, I like, my mind is like open and for help people and, kind of like grow up, you know.
I understand. Florian, how about you?
What I learned definitely is that there's no right or wrong to decisions that you make. There's just difference. So, I don't know, I had this example, butter on popcorn or salt on popcorn. we usually don't do that in Germany, but, I mean, it's not right, it's not wrong, it's just different, so.
It's all a cultural perspective, isn't it? Yeah. Capano?
One thing that I've definitely learned in my short 4 months of being here is that people, no matter where you are in the world, people don't judge you where you come from or what you're here to do. It's just that people are still here to help you. We've had a lot of people helping us through this process to, you know, get connections to here and there, who to contact, where we can, just giving us advice simply. And I really do appreciate that we have people here who treat us like family. So that's probably one of the greatest things that I've learned so far.
Well, it's a pleasure talking to you. We are talking with four Rotary Inbound Exchange students, Capano, Rifki, Marceline, and Florian, about a breakfast this coming Saturday from 8 until 11 at St. Anne's Parish Hall up on 5th Street. It is a fundraiser to target the goal of raising $4,000 to buy four shelter boxes, self-contained emergency kits for families who have been displaced. In particular, the shelter boxes are intended for the earthquake victims of the recent Ecuador earthquake. If you are interested in supporting the Shelter Box Project, you can go to shelterboxusa.org or check out the Facebook page, which is Fundraising Breakfast. Finish it for me.
Fundraising Breakfast or Shelter Box.
For Shelter Box. Thank you all for taking the time to come talk about your project.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are now going to hear from Warren Moon, who is the final of three speakers tomorrow at the Rotary Pillars of America speakers series. And Jeff conducted that interview with America's first black quarterback, Warren Moon.
Warren Moon is an award-winning football player who has played for several teams, including the Seattle Seahawks, whom he is now a TV and radio commentator for. He was the first African-American quarterback inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He holds more records than you could shake a stick at. In 2010, Moon started Sports One Marketing. Warren, thank you for being on the show with me today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to coming to Juneau soon.
You had a great big family, didn't you?
I did. You know, my mother was the matriarch of my family. We had I had six sisters, believe it or not, and just myself as the only boy. So I was the man of the house at a very young age. When my dad passed away when I was 7 years old, so I matured a little bit faster than most people my age. But you know, I wouldn't trade my childhood for the world. I took on a lot of responsibility at a very early age, and again, because of that, you know, I matured a lot faster than a lot of other kids my age. But I think it really helped me. As far as, you know, my growing up and the things that I had to deal with, I think it helped me as far as the environment that I lived in, making sure that I didn't go in the wrong direction, because there were a lot of gangs and you know, different violence in the neighborhood where I grew up. So I think my upbringing really, you know, helped shape me and form me and keep me on the straight and narrow as I was coming up through some very tough times.
At some point, you discovered you could throw a football longer and harder and straighter than anyone else, and soon a career in football followed. And your jersey says it all, number one. You want to explain that?
Well, I always felt like that was a number that signified in my mind where I always wanted to be. I always set my goals at being the best, trying to be being number one. I also wanted it to be a constant reminder to my teammates, looking at that number one on my chest, that I was their leader. That number one is where we wanted our teams to try and always finish. So it was just a constant reminder, you know, for our football players about where we wanted to be as far as individuals and as a team.
Do you think you were born to play football?
You know, I'm not sure. I think I was born to lead, and I think I've been a pretty good leader throughout my life, regardless of what it might be, whether it's in business, whether it's in my foundation, whether it's in football. But because I had the physical skills to play football to go along with the leadership, I think that's what kind of made a great combination.
In what ways has your experience as a quarterback driven your life?
Well, you know, as a quarterback, again, you're a leader. And everybody looks at you to be the guy to make the plays. Everybody looks at you to make, you know, pressure-type situation decisions. You're a guy that has to lead by example. You have to be the hardest worker or one of the hardest workers on your football team. You want to be able to put the most time in as far as being first in the building in the morning, last out of the building when the day is over. So all those things as a football player really helped me in my life going forward as I started a business, as I started my foundation, because you want to set the example for everyone. And if you're the one setting the example, and if you're the one that's the hardest worker and the one that that deals with adversity and deals with obstacles very well, I think it's gonna transpire to everybody else in your organization or in your football team. So that's kind of what my goal was always, to be the guy, the focal point, to be the example for everybody else to follow.
How important has family been in your career and your off-field life?
Well, it's been very important. I come from a big family, like I said, six sisters and my mom and myself. I had a big family of my own, five kids, and I tried to set the same examples that my mother taught me as a young kid growing up, and now I have grandkids, so hopefully my kids have followed in the ways that their mom and dad raised them, and are doing the same type of things as parents themselves. So family is very, very important, because you need that love, you need that support in your life in order to move on and be successful in anything. There's so many other outside distractions. There's so many other outside people that are negative in your life. You want to make sure you have that great positive family life that gives you that support and gives you that love that you need during those tough times.
Besides your mother, who has been instrumental in helping you determine your direction?
There's been a lot of different coaches in my life, no question about it. My college coach, Don James, was a guy that really believed in me, believed I could play college football when a lot of other major schools didn't. So he was a guy that I really looked to as a leader and a mentor. He taught me a lot about goal setting and about keeping your eyes on those goals, whether they were short-term, intermediate, or long-term. I think Hugh Campbell, one of my coaches in the Canadian Football League, he was another guy that believed I could play pro football and gave me that opportunity. So he was another guy that I really believed in. And then my attorney, my agent, and a very, very good friend of mine who was my presenter at the Hall of Fame, Lee Steinberg. He was another guy that I really had a great relationship with, both business and personal. A guy that really helped me in a lot of phases of my life, was with me throughout my whole career, and really helped form and shape a lot of the things that I'm doing today.
Tell me about Sports One Marketing, please.
Sports One Marketing is a sports marketing entertainment company that myself and my business partner and CEO, Dave Meltzer, started about 7 years ago. We spun this company off of working with Lee Steinberg. Lee was more into the agency side as far as representing players. We wanted to do more of the marketing side of sports and entertainment, so we spun that business off, and it's been very, very successful as far as helping companies that want to get more involved in sports, more visibility in sports. We do a lot of consulting for companies that want to be involved in sports. We also look for funding for people that have projects or sports-related items that they want to get to market. So we do a lot of different things, and we also have a lot of different events that we put on that have a charitable component to them. We're very big about giving back to communities, and we do a lot of that through not only my foundation, but also through our company, Sports One Marketing.
Can you tell me about your foundation, please?
My foundation is called the Crescent Moon Foundation. I started that back in 1989 when I was the man of the year in the National Football League for my off-field endeavors. And basically, our main focus is to provide scholarships to underprivileged high school kids to go to college. We feel like there's a lot of kids out there that have the academic requirements. They have the desire. They come from kind of depressed backgrounds. So we look for those type of kids to give them an opportunity to keep furthering their education so they can be successful in life, because we feel like every kid can't be a football player like myself, or they can't be a great basketball player, or they can't be a great actor or whatever. But I think all kids have the ability to learn if they put their minds to it, and I think education is one of the best ways to be successful in life, if you get the chance to be educated. So we try and give those opportunities as much as we possibly can.
I'm talking to Warren Moon, an award-winning football player who's played in several teams, and he's one of the pillars of America's speakers tomorrow, May 4th, at the Centennial Hall. What is the major theme of your talks to both people young and old?
I think the major thing I'm going to talk about is just my journey and what I had to go through in order to make it to the ultimate, which was the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and all the twists and turns and the obstacles that I had to go through, how I persevered through my adversity, and hopefully other people can relate to that they're going through adversity in their lives and how they deal with it, and maybe I can be a little bit of an inspiration to them as they're going through tough times in their life, but also showing that what can come out of it if you continue to keep working hard, if you continue to believe in yourself, if you continue to have people that believe in you, and you just keep your eyes on your goals that you set for yourself. I think if people can get something from that, from my talk, I think it'll be very beneficial for those that hear the message.
Warren, thanks so much for being on the air with me today. One last question. What music are you listening to now?
I listen to music all the time. I'm going to a big country western festival this weekend called Stagecoach, and they have some of the top country western groups in the world there. So I'm a big country western fan, but I also like R&B. I also like hip-hop, and I also love jazz. So I love a lot of different types of music.
All right. Thanks, Warren. Warren will be speaking tomorrow, May 4th, at Centennial Hall. Doors open at 11:15. Lunch is served at 11:30. Warren, I appreciate you being on the air with me today. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for having me on. Look forward to coming to Juneau for a visit.
Support for programming comes from the Capital City Weekly, focused on arts, culture, and entertainment in Southeast Alaska, with distribution at community retailers throughout the region. Information at capitalcityweekly.com.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. With me is Pat Hartman. She is the president of the Southeast Master Gardeners Association, and she is going to talk about this weekend's plant sale, which is set from 9 to noon at the Safeway parking lot. Pat, tell us a little bit about this event. My first question is, how long has this been going on?
Well, Lori, thank you for having me here. I'm unsure exactly how long it's been going on, but I know it was originally started by the Juneau Garden Club. And my understanding is that there was basically two clubs. One of them started in the late 1920s, and eventually they brought them both together. And they were doing the plant sale down at Delray Highway.
Oh, sure.
For a long time. And then it kind of expanded out. And what happened was, it used to be that before the barges came on more of a basis than what they were, they might get here once a week. So really your only chance of getting garden starts was from either a plant sale done by local groups or by your neighbor. So this kind of started out is a bounding of that, and now it's all the local nonprofit organizations that are the horticultural societies. Jensen Arboretum is one of them, the Master Gardeners, the Juneau Garden Club, the Juneau Community Gardens. They all take turns rotating and being in charge of this each year, and then we invite vendors that are for profit to come and participate. So,
do you know when the first sale was held?
I am not sure, but that's a great question. I will have to look into that and make sure that whoever's in charge of it next year has that correct answer.
So it sounds like we're headed towards a century of it pretty soon here.
It could be. I'm going to have to go home and research now when the first plant sale was. So
thanks for sharing about the various organizations that offer plants for sale. Mm-hmm. And you said that they rotate the management of the sale. What is the purpose? Is it just to offer Juneau a collective of opportunity to buy a variety of plants?
I'm sure that's a lot of it. And then a lot of the organizations, that's one of their fundraisers that they do.
I see.
For different events throughout the season.
So this is a big deal for those nonprofits that have as its main focus plants, et cetera. So speaking of plants, and knowing that last May was a prize winner and this one has started off a little rough, what's a good bet to be planting soon in Juneau that you can pretty much guarantee will be quite successful?
Well, primroses right now. I know we'll have a lot of those in the plant sale from various vendors. And I know the Master Gardeners have got some beautiful ones that are going to be there for sale. And I'm pretty sure the Arboretum usually has quite a few of
of primroses also. So it's a great way to get some of those primroses that you might want to add to your collection or start your collection. Another thing is vegetables. So if you want to start a garden here, we're kind of funny on what we can grow and what we can't. So there's one person I know that's doing a long range of vegetables, so long season crop vegetables. We have 9 different types that the Juneau Community Gardens will be selling of tomatoes.
Nine types of tomatoes. That was surprising.
So everything from, you know, if you've got a greenhouse or some sort of wind tunnel that you can grow your tomatoes in, there's those that grow quite tall, and then we also have some that are in hanging baskets and some that will be bush tomatoes that will actually grow outside. They're more the little cherry tomatoes, but those are great in salads. So if you're dying for a wonderful fresh tomato, get to the plant sale and buy your vegetables, because they really sell out quick. And of course we'll have, I know they're going to have zucchini and crookneck squashes there also. So
should buyers feel free to ask questions of vendors to get this kind of advice?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question, because one of the new things that we're going to be doing this year, in the past, the Arboretum has always had a booth beforehand. It starts at 9, but people start lining up at 8:30 or so or earlier, and you can't get into the sale area until 9 o'clock. So there's booths going to be set up, and the Arboretum in the past has done memberships there, but we've asked each of the nonprofit organizations to have a booth where you can go and see what each of the groups is selling and also different ways and conditions for those helpful hints for growing.
Glad to hear that. I'm talking with Pat Hartman. She's president of the Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners Association, and we're talking about this Saturday's plant sale. It sounds like if you're interested, you should get to the Safeway parking lot early. It starts at 9, but people start lining up way before that, and it goes to noon. I'm going to give you a website if you're listening. If you would like some more information, I'm going to spell it out for you. It's SEAK, that's for Southeast Alaska, SEAK-mastergardeners.org. Pat, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
This is Bird Note. It's spring, and the ruby-crowned kinglet's loud, rollicking song echoes from the forest edge in northern and western lowlands. Listen carefully, and you can hear 3 distinct parts of its song. This tiny powerhouse of a singer is one of the smallest songbirds on the continent, weighing in at just a little more than half a chickadee. Mostly green and hard to spot, flitting from twig to twig, it hovers in midair as it catches tiny insects. The green crown feathers on the male kinglet conceal a swatch of red ones. When in the mood to sing, he raises this narrow crimson crest. The kinglet's Latin name suits it well, Regulus Calendula, the glowing little king. A regal luster that points to his ruby crown, but could also describe his song. The ruby-crowned kinglet tunes up his spring song only in the lowlands. Later this month, he'll depart to sing and nest at mile-high altitudes in our mountain forests. To see a photo of this bird and all we feature on the show, come to our website, birdnotes.org. I'm Mary McCann.
This Friday, May 6th, is Child Care Appreciation Day. Please join THRED and AEYC Southeast in thanking all of our hardworking child care professionals. Their work every day has tremendous impact on children's early brain development, supports working parents, and strengthens our local economy. If you have a child in care, remember to thank your provider on Friday. For those looking for licensed care that is safe, healthy, and playful, check out THRED's new online search tool at threadalaska.org. This message is brought to you by AEYC Southeast and THRED.
Well, welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I wish y'all could see our little studio right now. There are 13 of us in this small room, and that's because we have 10 members, and the drama director of Junie B. Jones, which is the musical at JDHS. Welcome, Michelle Amore. You are the drama teacher and the director of the musicals at JD, and you have been for some time. It's nice to have you here. Why don't you give us the basics about this play, and then we'll hear from the participants.
Okay. So Junie B. Jones, the musical, takes four of the Junie B. Jones books from first grade, puts them together with wonderful, lively music, and it's just a really good time for kids and their adults that come with them.
And when will the musical be playing, and what are the ticket costs?
Okay, so the show opens next Thursday, and so it's May 12th, 13th, and 14th. Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night at 7 p.m., Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m., and then we're having a really cool extravaganza on Saturday from 3:30 to 5. It's called the Junie B. Jones Jamboree, and kids can come out, of course, with adult chaperones, and they can play with the cast. We're going to do lots of different activities. They can play kickball with the cast. They can read with Junie B. Jones. They can do art. They can have their face painted, etc.
Kidorama.
Yes, Kidorama.
And how much are the tickets?
So the tickets to the Jamboree is $10 per kid, and that's for K through fifth grade. And the tickets for the show are $15 general admission, $10 student or child.
Great. We'll repeat all that critical information at the end about Junie B. Jones and the nuts and bolts. We're going to start at the far end there, and if each of you would please say your name and your role and maybe one thing that's a takeaway for you or that you've learned as part of this process.
Okay. I'm Emily, and I'm the stage manager, and I just really enjoy working with this cast, and it's really exciting, and they're super fun to work with.
Emily, say your last name.
Snitches.
Okay. Very good.
Well, I'm Sean Gonzalez, and I'm part of the crew, and I just started about, like, 2 days ago, and I feel like these people are awesome, and the play's going to be really awesome.
Great. Thanks, Sean.
I'm Lydia Smith, and I am the assistant director and also assistant choreographer, and so this show has been really fun for me because I've never gotten to do anything like that. I'm normally in the show myself, but, yeah, it's been really fun.
Got some big tasks.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Summer Putman. I'm playing the mom, and this show is kind of cool because I'm one of the few actual adult characters in it, so I get to be more mature, and it's kind of fun to watch everyone else be childish.
A brand new role.
My name is Miriam Meredith, and I'm playing May, who is Junie B. Jones' arch nemesis in this play, and so it's a very fun role. And really the takeaway from this for me is just keeping my energy up the whole show, because it's a very quick, very fast-paced show, so we have to all keep our energy up. And that's been a challenge, but I think it's also been a lot of fun.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of work.
Hi, I'm Lily Otzi, and I'm playing Lucille. I think an interesting part of the show has been, like, really understanding how kids act, because now that we're teenagers, we act, like, all slum, and we don't really, like, talk much, so it's just, like, interesting to keep the energy up, like Miriam said, and yeah, it's just been really fun and interesting.
Hi, I'm Capri Potter. I'm in the chorus. I think my favorite part of the show has just been getting to learn and act with a new cast, because this is my first show with JD.
Yay!
Fun!
Yay. Hi, I'm Katie Bachman. I'm also in chorus, and I think this has been, I've enjoyed working with these people, and it's really amazing.
Hola, my name is Malcolm Lumba, and I play Jose in the play, and one thing that I've found is that it is extremely exhausting to be a first grade child every single night.
Let's have fantastic. Let's have our last student come up. We're almost out of time.
Well, hi, I'm Keely Ewing, and I play the role of Junie B. Jones, which is my first lead role in the play at JDHS, and I think it's fun to learn maturity in acting through an immature first grader character.
Well, look for Junie B. Jones, the musical at JDHS, May 12, 13, and 14, with a kid jamboree on Saturday following at 3:30. Thanks for joining us on Afternoon.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210A.